Drunk on Comics presents Interviews from Grand Con, Part 1. We start off this show with us doing a panel for Ryan Stegman and his entire life's work. We also got to go on the show floor and talk to Dirk Manning and Seth DeMoose, as well as Sarah and Tyler Soles. So stay tuned for more interviews coming from Grand Con. The Life and Times of Ryan Stegman, Part 1 of a 12-part series.
Soon to come to the History Channel. Yeah. It's going to be like the World War II things. So, well, live from Grand Con here in Salon B, we're with Ryan.
Hello.
Hello. So, so this is The Life and Times, so I figured the most appropriate thing. When you were four...
Now let's start at the beginning. I was born in Anderson, Indiana.
All right. Well, actually, you know, the one thing I did figure was probably good for the panel, because we've talked to you a bunch about, you know, the different books that you're working on currently. We haven't really talked to you much about how you got into comics, because that's actually one of the things I know a lot of people, you know, that we're friends with, they're trying to break in. Mm-hmm. And I know that you did a lot of stuff online.
Right. Yeah, that was the key, really, was... what I would read at the time was that, you know, in magazines or whatever, online hadn't really exploded like it is now. But they would always say, you have to go to the conventions, you have to go meet editors and all this stuff. And I just was, you know, I didn't have access to all that stuff. Especially, we had Motor City Comic Con, but it was kind of down at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of stuff like that. So I would just post stuff on digital webbing and all over the internet, and eventually started getting offers from like small independent stuff, and you know.
What was the first paid gig?
Well, the first real like published or paid, because I got paid for stuff that didn't get published.
Let's start with the paid.
All right, I was doing actually when I was 15, I did something for CFD Productions or something like that, and. They hired me to do this little horror story, and I think I got paid like $100 for like 10 pages, so like $10 a page. But then I put it, I remember I got that check. My parents were pretty impressed that I actually paid for drawing something, and then I never ever saw a published version of it. I don't know if it was published or what happened, but I got a check, so... It was real. And then I started doing... Then, you know, after that, I didn't have anything paid for a while. I wasn't really trying to get paid for drawing. I was just trying to get better at it. Because I was still in high school. And then I went away to college, did, like, no drawing at all. And then I got out of college and started drawing, you know, trying to make a career out of it. And I would just... Anything that anybody posted online, like, we need an artist for this, I would just start hounding them and please pay me to do that. And, you know, there was all kinds of stuff that you could find online, you know, job postings or whatever, and stuff started to pay a little bit. Basically, for the first, like, 3 years of my career, I was probably making, I mean, significantly less than minimum wage hourly, but, you know. Paying my dues.
Did you go to college for art school then?
Or? No, I went for... I got an English degree from Michigan State. But I had... Well, I knew before I went that I wanted to be a comic book artist. And so that made it very difficult to focus in college. So I had like... I think I had... All in at the end, I had 7 different majors. And what would happen is every time that a major got difficult, because, you know, they all kind of start out relatively general, and then they get more specific, and they get difficult. And I'd be like, well, I just want to draw a comic book, so why would I waste my time in marketing when this is getting hard? So then I just switched to whatever else. And then what happened was I'd always take English classes as electives, because I like to read and write. And at the end, I was looking at it and I was like, oh my God, everybody's going to graduate and I don't even, you know. So I was like, what can I graduate in the fastest? And it was English. I got the English degree. And I actually, as a senior in high school, I was a better artist than I was as a senior in college. By the time that came around, I had rusted so much from not drawing. So then I had to relearn everything that I had learned prior to that. So that was, it was a mistake. I think I should have gone to school for it or just gone after it right away. I don't know what would have been better.
Stylistically, how big of a change from, you know, high school to then relearning again after college was it?
It wasn't much of a change. I'm still into the same stuff. I just wasn't very good.
Okay.
I wasn't like that good in high school, but I was able to control it quite a bit more. Because what happens is you have the visions in your head of what you want it to look like, mm-hmm. and you know what you want it to look like, but you're like, I can't get it to come out this way. And I was much closer to the vision in my head in high school than I was when I finished college. I was like, I don't even remember how to get from point A to point B on a drawing anymore, you know? So, but I figured it out, lived in my parents' basement, lost a bunch of weight because I didn't have any money. And that's when I met my wife, and she said that I looked, when she first met me, she said I looked like the machinist. Because I was 6'4", I got down to 160 pounds.
Wow.
Because my parents don't keep much food in the house, so I was like eating handfuls of almonds, pretty much that's it. And yeah, I got way down in weight, but now I'm fat again, so.
Well, yeah, you're gigantic. So,
going back to your past and your childhood, what comics were you reading then?
Well, when I was younger, I actually didn't read a lot of comics. I didn't have any access to them until fifth grade or so. Okay. I was really into animation. I wanted to be an animator. I wanted to do Disney movies and all that stuff. But I did see a documentary about animation, and it looked like a real job. So that turned me off to it a little bit. And then in fifth grade, I met a friend who had a bunch of comic books. And it was like, what it turns out, I didn't know at the time, because at the time I didn't put together that specific people were drawing these. I was just like, this looks awesome. The ones that I was drawn to were the McFarlane Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
So I got completely obsessed, and he and I would just like create characters all the time. You know, they all had the name Cyber in their name, you know, because at the time that was all the rage.
Good?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right,
cool.
So, like stuff like Cyber Bowl, I remember was one.
Cyber Bowl. Ooh.
Like any animal, cyber this animal.
And so creative.
Yeah. And but we both had our own team of characters. You know, we'd have like 15. You know, and we'd always draw them fighting each other, whatever. And then I moved away from there, and once again, kind of fell off from it because again, I didn't have a comic book store near me, you know. Mm-hmm. But then what happened was, so when I was in high school, I had a comic book store open up near me. And when I went in there, I bought like two books, two Spawn issues,
mm-hmm.
and was just like instantly like, oh my God. Like my perspective on it had completely changed, whereas when I was a kid, I just enjoyed them and I liked drawing and whatever. But in high school, when I had to start thinking about what I was going to do with my life or whatever, and I got those books, I was like, immediately, this is what I want to do. I knew there was something that I could do because I knew I could draw, but I didn't know what I was going to do with it because I didn't want to be an animator anymore. So,
were you consciously aware when you were buying the Spawn books that it was McFarlane?
No. It's so weird because there were a couple things that happened. One was my dad would get Forbes magazine because he thinks he's rich. And he, on the cover of one, it said 25 people, it was like 25 people who made millions outside of the business world or whatever, which is kind of a misnomer because McFarlane really did make his millions in the business world, technically. But he was in there, and he was on the cover, and so I was looking at it, I was like, oh, the Spawn thing, that's interesting. And then I saw how much money he made, and I was like, ooh. All comic book artists must make that much money.
Yeah.
But then I bought those Spawn issues, and then what happened was I started to get more and more into it. What I was doing was the books were at the time $1.95. I would steal quarters from my dad, and I would go buy the Spawn issues for the first few months of my comic collecting. Then I started expanding, And then I was like, you know what would be cool? I want to see if they have those old Spider-Man issues that I was so into. Because I was obsessed with particularly the issue of Spider-Man where they had Wolverine and Wendigo that he drew. And so I went and I went into the back issues and I found it. And when I opened it up and I saw it was Todd McFarlane, I was like, no way, this is crazy. Like, apparently, like, because this was, I don't know, it just seemed like it was, like, meant to be at that point, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you ended up getting to draw Spider-Man for quite a while, you know?
Yeah, that was a big goal in my life was to draw Spider-Man. I mean, that's why, you know, if I had a choice to work for DC or Marvel, I wanted to do Marvel because I wanted to draw Spider-Man, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, getting that opportunity was pretty insane.
Well, you had the one issue of Amazing, which I can't remember which issue was off the top of my head.
665.
665, sorry.
Unbelievable.
I know. And then from there you went and you did Scarlet Spider for how many issues on that?
I did 5 of the first 6 issues and then all the covers.
Okay.
And then they asked me to do, because in their eyes, you know, the way that it works is, even though Scarlet Spider was kind of selling him out as much as Fantastic Four, in their mind, Fantastic Four is a big promotion. And I liked Fantastic Four a lot, but at first when they offered it, I was a little bit hesitant. But they got me by saying, and then after that, well, I said, I want to know what I'm doing after that, because I knew it was only 3 issues. And they said, and I told them that I wanted to do Spider-Man. And so they said, okay. So then I was like, all right, let's do it.
So, you know, I want to own back up a little bit. How did you get into Marvel? Because I know that's a big thing for a lot of artists out there. You know, I mean, you submit, you know, test pages and, you know, all these different things to them. How did you get in there?
Well, I had a pretty lucky break. You know, I hate saying it's lucky because people sometimes focus on luck too much and it's really a lot of perseverance. But because I was hunting down jobs constantly, you know, like rabidly, I got wind of this job because I was doing Midnight Kiss, the first independent book that I did. It was a 5-issue series for Marcosia. And then I found out about this novel adaptation because I knew that this was going to end and I needed to make money. And so I found out the Dable brothers were doing these novel adaptations and they were going to have an opening. So I started contacting them. They asked me for some samples pages, which I remember the last day I was finishing Midnight Kiss. I was on my deadline. I had to stay up all night I finished that, and then I had to stay up all night to do the samples to get the Magician Apprentice job. They gave me that job. And then right after I got that, Marvel bought that company. So then all of a sudden I had Marvel editors, and I was very not good at drawing yet. It was Mark Paniccia. He's like the Hulk office. And he noticed that, like, market improvements from issue to issue. And so he started taking an interest in me. And he was keeping me employed, I think I want to see where this goes. You know what I mean? Because I did the Magician stuff, and then after that, he started giving me like little things like Marvel Adventure stuff. But it was a little dicey there for a while. Like, I didn't know that I was going to have work. But he was just kind of like, I want to keep giving you things. And then I did that, and then I moved up to Incredible Hercules, and then I was in the Marvel Universe and moved up from there. So
She-Hulks and a couple issues of, X-23.
Yep. The Sif one-shot.
Yep.
After the Sif one shot is when they offered me an exclusive contract, and I've been working for them ever since.
They don't have a ton of exclusive creators. I mean, I know that Charles Soule's one of the writers that I know that just went exclusive with them, but it doesn't seem like they have a wide, you know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how many people have them or.
Yeah.
But I know that when they offered it to me, I, in my head, was, they just said, we want to give you a contract. And I was like, okay, you know, that's great. And I convinced myself that it was not an exclusive contract because I was just like, there's no way they're giving me that, you know, right now. And then I told my friend about it, and he was like, that's an exclusive contract. That's what they are. And I was like, what is happening right now? You know?
You're like, yes, I have work.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to actually make it.
Well, we're now, you know, after doing the Spider-Man, Wolverine, and all that, you're now on Inhuman with Charles Soule. So it's a full-on exclusive, you know, creative team on that.
Right.
And you're penciling and inking both on that. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that are enjoying it, because, and I know you're having fun, because you're actually getting to create new characters,
right.
Brand new characters.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we've seen Reader.
Uh-huh.
And what's it like being part of that whole process?
Oh, well, that was the whole appeal of doing the job in the first place, was you don't get to create stuff and have the back. Marvel, it seems like over the years they've done this every once in a while where they're like, we need to create some new stuff. And then they start, and then they chicken out, and they back out. But this one, they're 100% behind, because they, you know, it behooves them to create new properties now that they've got this whole movie universe and all that stuff going. So it's like, when they told me about it, on a checklist of things that I wanted to do at Marvel, it was obviously Spider-Man. You know, Wolverine would be on there. I still haven't ever really done much Thor, but he's on my list. And then creating characters was up there as well. Like, you know, you look at my favorite creators, you know, say McFarlane, for example. He, you know, essentially created Venom and stuff. And I wanted to have something like that I can leave, you know, Marvel with. Yeah,
yeah,
and just be like, I always, you know, I created that thing. So that's what we're hoping to do.
How does the creative process go? Like, does Charles kind of come up with what he wants for in his storytelling? Or do you kind of say, this is going to look sweet, let's put them in?
It's kind of both. He had a list of characters that I was going to design. So I think it was, so far I've designed 3 of his characters that he had written a little description for. There's another character named Naja, who it will be in issue 6. Well, she appeared in issue 5 for the first time. She'll be featured heavily in issue 6. Where the day that I got the job, I was like, started texting him. I didn't even know him at this point, but I was like, he like gave me his number, so I just started badgering him, and I started sending him ideas for this character, because you know, I just wanted to, and I thought he was paying me lip service, kind of being like, oh yeah, that's cool, like, this guy's really overbearing. And then I got the script for issue 4, and he was like, hey, start putting her in the background in this issue, and then she'll be in issue 5. And then how much he featured her in 5 and 6, I was like, you know, it was pretty awesome. So we just kind of came up with that out of the blue. And then that's kind of how it works, is we just... like there's the character Flint, who was featured heavily in issue 5. Charles had the description written, and I designed him. And now, you know, I've been sending him ideas of, like, how we can expand his powers and things that will look cool that he can do and all that type of stuff. And, you know, sometimes he ignores me, and that's his right. Because I always tell him, I'm like, man, I might just be a crazy person. I don't know. So, you know, you don't have to use this stuff. But it's, I don't know, I just like to be able to throw out crazy. My wife was, we went out to dinner with Charles where was I?
Was that at Motor City?
Toronto. My wife and I went out with Charles and his wife, and my wife was pitching Charles character ideas throughout the entire dinner. So,
what are his scripts like? I mean, is he very rigid on it? Is it pretty loose?
It's not loose. He's actually really good. Some writers, you can tell that they think visually, so they come into it with, like, ooh, you know what I think would be a cool visual, you know, and they come up with a way to write that in there. His scripts are very descriptive, very long-winded in a way, with his descriptions, but he's also very flexible on if I want to change things or whatever.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I just, you know, he'll suggest something, and then I kind of change it, and then suggest things back. But mostly he's been giving me such descriptive stuff that I don't have to change much, because... Again, like, I can tell he thinks visually, because you will work with writers who, and nothing against them, it's just that some of them think verbally, and so, you know, their focuses on what they're going to be saying, and they're not so concerned about putting it in a cool setting and all these things. But Charles is definitely good at that. So
nice.
Like if you notice in issue 4, we start off in this, I think it was called the Wulingyuan region of China, which I never heard of. But he sent along in the script, there were photos that he had found, and he was like, in this area. And I saw those photos, I was like, oh man, that place is awesome, this will be a lot of fun, you know. So that's the kind of stuff that he does.
Cool.
Now that you've got a name for yourself, but starting off doing the con circuits back then compared to now, join it more, have more fun? I mean, you're getting to go to bigger, better cons, or is it kind of like it's another weekend of work, or do you enjoy yourself?
They can be the bigger ones, like you know, the New Yorks and the Chicagos and stuff, those can be, I still have fun after, but it's like, I go to those ones and know that I have to go to bed early, because it's going to be a tough slog the next day. Like, it is, it's mentally exhausting, but it's still fun, because, you know, you get to just talk to fans and people that are interested in the same things that you are, but sometimes just the nonstop, you know, signing and drawing and all that stuff can get difficult. But like, generally the smaller ones I have, get to have a little more fun, maybe too much fun judging by how my head feels today.
Well, hey, we had nothing to do with that. So what if you, and I know Thor is a big one that you've always wanted to draw, so I mean, you're getting a little bit, you know, in within human, being able to draw him in there a little bit. Are there any other characters that you would really want to get your hands on?
I don't think so. I think, you know, it's weird because, like, I wouldn't have thought that I would love drawing Medusa as much as I do. So there's definitely characters that I don't know that I would love to draw because I haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the ones that I knew I wanted to draw, you know. But really, I think that it's more exciting to make new characters than anything. So, you know, I just want to keep doing more of that stuff, and also Thor.
Yeah. Looking back at all the characters you've done, besides Spider-Man, because that was a big goal of yours, what other one that you kind of were given to you throughout Marvel or through anything else that you've done that was kind of your favorite to have just randomly started drawing, not thinking that you'd have as much fun doing it?
Yeah, like I said, Medusa's like that. So far, I mean, the character that we created, Reader, has been unbelievable to draw. I don't know why it's so fun, but it is. Like, characters that I came to and didn't know that I would want to...
Yeah.
What about X-23? Because you killed her.
Yeah, I liked drawing X-23. You know, yeah, I did like drawing her a lot. And Gambit was in those issues, too, and I thought that was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that I would like drawing him. Yeah, I haven't really not in, like, specifically... The only characters I don't want to draw is the ones that have the really ornate costumes, because that's a pain in the butt, you know?
Well, isn't Spider-Man, like, one of the worst costumes to draw, though, from what I've heard?
Not for me. But you know why? Is because when I wasn't doing this professionally, I still was drawing Spider-Man all the time. So it's like, to me, it's just second nature. Because people say that all the time, and I'm just like... it's all I've ever drawn. I don't really know anything different, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, it seems pretty simple.
So, I don't know if you can say this or not, but as far as Inhuman, I mean, are you on that book for the foreseeable future?
Yeah. When I took it, because when I took Wolverine, the plan was I was going to be on it for longer than I was, but the whole death of stuff started, that all came up organically after I had started the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have left it after only 4 issues wasn't ideal. So when I was leaving, especially because I left Spider-Man for it, you know? So when I was leaving, I kind of, and they asked me to do Inhuman, I said, all right, but let's just do this. Like, let's really do it and make it something. So hopefully I can do that for a while because, you know, I'd like it to be, you know, the X-Men of the... 80s, you know,
where they started.
I'd love to have that happen where we just keep building and building and building and we have the backing of the company, and I'd like to see, you know, at some point it'd be cool if we could get it to the point where so many people were interested in it that the sales started rising, because I think that's what would happen if you after you've established all these new characters and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think that it would be really cool to see it start to take off, you know, take shape in a whole new way.
Is there any back office fighting between the X-Men books and the Inhumans? Because since they're kind of similar in mutants and Inhumans, and they're really throwing Inhumans within the Marvel Universe?
I don't, not yet, but the Inhuman hasn't really started, they haven't started crossing over with other stuff yet, so maybe that could, but in general, these things are so planned out, and there's so many, it's just like a well-oiled machine, pretty much. So they don't. I don't think they ever get mad at each other about it.
Tony just really wants to see the X-Men fight Inhumans.
Yeah,
is basically what it is.
I thought it sounded like he wanted to hear the editors fight each other.
Well, but only if they're cosplaying.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
So, we should probably do questions if anybody has any.
Anybody?
Is everybody going to be really nervous and not ask a question?
Out of all these millions of people in this room,
yeah.
How many do we have here? Over 1,000, I'd say.
Yeah. Thousand, but
well, count all the tickets you got.
Got at least one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we have any questions.
Come on, guys.
Oh wait, there we go.
How do you feel about the death of Wolverine?
Yeah. By the way, do you blame Charles for that because he's writing it?
No. I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I really liked the first. I haven't read the second one yet, the second Death of Wolverine issue, but I really liked the first one. I think that it's people get bent out of shape about deaths of characters, but I think that it's a new way. Like, if you look at the way that we did Superior Spider-Man, where Peter Parker had technically died, but it actually became an exploration of who that character was.
We're laughing because of the inside
the
joke
ghost
that that we've had for too long.
It becomes an exploration of the character in a different way. So like a world without a Marvel universe without Wolverine, and the other characters' reactions to that all is actually about Wolverine. He's just not physically there. So I think it's a good way to learn more about the character. You know, what a good answer.
That was a great answer. Wow. I'm blown away. Anybody else? I think we got... No?
You in the back.
Yeah, I know you got a question. Come on. You're on the spot.
Could be anything about his life.
Yeah.
What do you have for
this
breakfast
this
morning?
This is the life and times of Ryan's... I had pancakes.
Okay, here's one. With being contract exclusive to Marvel, we all know about deadlines, and you have your hardcore deadlines and the amount of workload you have, and constantly being on the circuit. How difficult do you find it to make those deadlines, like when you're at one of these huge cons?
Yeah, I'd say it's impossible.
Do you like try to work ahead before a convention so you can kind of
I have a very specific amount of pages that I do every week. And that all I try and do is hit that whether I'm going to a convention or not. If I don't hit it, like, so say, because it's generally I try to do 4 pages a week. If it's 3 pages in a cover or whatever. If I hit only 3 that week because of a convention, then the next week I have to hit 5.
Okay.
And that's just how it is. So it's nearly impossible. I hate it. And but, you know, I love the job. So I'd be drawing. See, the hard part of it is not the sitting down and drawing. I'll do that all day, every day, you know. The hard part is just when I go to a convention or I have any life event that requires me to not sit down and draw.
Like two small children.
Yeah, yes. Yes, the kids, you know, now that Harrison's 6 months old, things have smoothed out a little bit. But for a while there, it was like, I don't know, I was not hitting 4 pages a week very often. But it's definitely... I've gotten quicker lately, so.
Now you're talking about covers. How does Marvel go about having variant cover artists? Like, is it something where you're like, man, I would really love to just do the store cover,
right? Yeah,
and submit it, or
I have no. Well, no, I wouldn't draw it without getting paid. I have contacted them and said I'd like to do something for such and such thing, and they'll usually, you know, be like, oh yeah, okay, but most of the time they just contact me. They say, you know, they talked about it, they're like, oh, he would do a good cover, and they asked me to do it. And then a lot of times they also call me and they say, we were going to have you do this cover, but you're too far behind right now. So, like, just kind of jabbing at me. So
that's now, with, how it works. With the work schedule and family and all that, do you have time to read any comics yourself right now?
Yeah, I'm just not – I'm not current. Like, I don't read them month to month. But I get you know, I just would get obsessed with one thing and read a ton of it and then – move on. So like, but it'll be from like 10 years ago. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it's usually for me, I usually choose a book more based on the art anyway. So if it's like an artist that I really like and I haven't read something by them, I'll go read like 20 issues of something and then move on to whatever else.
Who are some of your favorite artists out there right now? I mean, I know that's a loaded question, that there's a ton of people out there, but right.
Well, Capullo's like one of my favorites and he's doing amazing work. There's so many. Stuart Immonen right now is incredible. Sean Murphy does amazing stuff. Man, I'm blanking on, because there's just so many. I mean, anytime Arthur Adams does anything, I go crazy.
Yeah.
Ryan Stegman's amazing.
I love my own work very much. No, but yeah, Lineal U, all those guys, you know,
yeah.
Tons of them.
Question?
You mean like if they offer me to do stuff on it?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I love that.
I'm about to say something very controversial, guys. I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who in my life. I know. Especially having worked with Dan Slott. Do you know that he is might literally be the biggest fan of Doctor Who in the world? Where he would call me and he'd be like, you know, it's like in that one Doctor Who. And I'd be like, Dan, I haven't seen that. But I do enjoy, like, the concept of it. I've been told, you know, all the things about it, and it does seem cool. So, of course, I would, you know, if that came up, I would probably do something. Except, obviously, now the companies that are publishing it are not Marvel, and I have a contract.
Like, from an imagery standpoint, does any of the art out there interest you in Doctor Who?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen some really cool, you know, Doctor Who-related art and stuff like that. And Josh Adams is a friend of mine. He was doing some art on that book. So, yeah, I think it's pretty cool, for sure.
All right. Any other questions?
Maybe from the ladies in the room. We actually have ladies in here.
They're just drooling and looking at Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think that we'll probably wrap it up, unless there's anything else coming up that you want to plug that you need to tell people.
Inhuman Wednesday, right? You're gonna. This will be out by Wednesday.
Yeah, this might be out on Wednesday. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, it'll be the issue 6 is out on Wednesday.
Cool.
And then I'm skipping 7 and 8, and back on at 9 through 12, and whatever else after.
Any spoilers?
Pepe Larraz.
Okay.
Which what happened was obviously the book was kind of delayed at the beginning, and then so when my issues started to come out. They've had them come out every 2 weeks to kind of catch it up to speed. So, of course, I don't do a book every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have to have Pepe. But Pepe, I've seen the art for it, and it's amazing. I'm really impressed. And so I think it won't miss a beat.
What? And actually, I guess this will kind of lead into another question. And I don't know if you can say whether readers in those issues that he's doing, but when you've got something like this where you created... And whether it's even, you know, friends or fan, mm-hmm. you know, fan work or whatnot, what's that like seeing stuff where people have kind of, you know...
I've only seen one other... Ryan Ottley drew one of my characters on a cover, so he drew Nausea on a cover, and I was like, that was pretty awesome. He's one of my favorite artists, and he's a good friend of mine, but having seen that, it was really cool. I think I will get proprietary over it at some point, where I'm like, yeah, he's not doing this right or that right. But lately at conventions, I've been going around and getting guys to draw Reader.
Nice.
And it's... so cool to see, and I'd like to see more of it. I just don't mess it up, or I'm gonna call you out.
Are there any spoilers or anything that you could share with some upcoming stuff?
I will say I don't think Reader is in 7 and 8. I know he's in 9, and there are specific things that I told Charles he's not allowed to have anybody else do with him yet, because there's certain things we want to reveal about him, and I'm like, those are in my issues, and he's been good about it. So, but in issue 6, I'll say it's definitely the most it's got the most action of any of the Inhuman issues so far. It's kind of the culmination of this storyline. And we see it really heavily focuses on some of the new characters. It's obviously Medusa's in it, but there's some really cool action stuff going on in there. So
fun.
Mm-hmm.
Any last chance?
Trying again.
Going once, twice. All right, he's sold.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.
I got a question. When are you going to draw those cool drunk on comics guys in a comic book?
Never.
Damn it. All right.
All right.
I'm still paying for it.
Well, we are here with Dirk Manning and Seth the Moose back in the back in the corner, just sulking because he was only able to eat 4 Duster Dogs.
And he ate the 4th one under duress.
Yeah, and Dirk pounded 5 and was
going
to go back.
He could have kept going, yeah.
But he wanted ice cream.
I did. I had ice cream afterwards as well. So
yeah.
And then I went out and karaoke that night.
He pounded 5 wieners. I was there.
Wait, what was that?
He pounded 5 wieners. I was there.
Yeah.
How many wieners did you pound?
2.
Cosmic KC with 2 Ks?
Yes. Oh, my God. Is that Cosmic KC over there?
Oh, my God, it
oh
is.
Oh, my God.
I saw Cosmic KC pounding wieners. How many wieners did you pound it yesterday?
I can only take 2, you know.
Well,
at the same time?
Yeah. But although Seth does have a valid point, you raw-dogged the 1.
I did raw-dog the 1.
It almost shouldn't count.
Almost. Listen to the whiner over here.
A raw hot dog.
Well, because here's the thing. You know, people have been talking up Yesterdog. This is my first time in Grand Rapids. People talking up Yesterdog, talking up Yesterdog. I found in my foodie travels that a lot of times when people say it's a good hot dog, it's really good sauce. So I wanted a naked wiener. And the guys were like, you want nothing on it. I'm like, I want nothing. Because I just want to try. You know, the way to... Right.
I said, notice how comfortable he was talking about that, how much he likes his wieners bare.
Right. Now, keep in mind, I've been staying at the DeMoose household for 2 days, so that's why.
Yeah, about it.
They have a no clothing rule in the house. But, so I wanted to try just a naked wiener just to find out. And it was good. Yesterdog lived up to the hype. It was amazing. And I grew up in Toledo, Tony Paco's, and Yesterdog was awesome.
Yeah, my family's all from the Toledo area.
Right,
and
right.
So, yeah, Paco's is, that's a staple.
It's a staple. Oh,
but,
yeah.
But like we talked about, I mean, still I like the chicken paprikash there better than their hot dogs.
Yeah.
Sorry, Toledo.
Yeah. All right, Cosmic Casey.
Bye, Cosmic Casey.
CosmicCasey.com. Exiting the scene.
The crossover
Casey's
ends.
Mom has got it
going
on.
Casey's mom has got it going on.
Hey, I think you missed a spot over there.
But yeah, it was good stuff, man. And yeah, so you know, Seth can grumble about the 4th one he ate under duress, but
it's a bit
the
much,
record,
man.
The record,
I called willpower, and I had none.
I'm pretty sure it was your wife that was more upset about you eating that 4th
dog. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
She was just stink eyeing him, which makes it all the more worth it to me.
I know.
That way, Seth and I got to hang up and talk when she went to bed.
Right.
She's all mad. No, 4 hot dogs. What do you
sat
thinking?
Outside and broke wind for hours.
So we should pull this back to the comics at some point.
Oh, that's my cue.
Yeah. Well,
and now, he's out.
Now people already heard on our episode, which the weekly episode of our show, which will have already aired by the time that this interview comes
the special
out.
Special edition.
We talked about Tales of Mystery, Carmageddon issue 1 for our Indie Turnpike segment.
Right. Thank you.
Talked
Thank
about
you.
How awesome it was. But kind of, you can kind of plug away. And by the way, Foodie, you got your Faygo Rockin' Rye.
Rockin' Rye. My official drink for Dirk on Comics.
He doesn't have it all. He did dump a lot of it on the floor for his homies this morning.
Well, it fizzed.
First thing he did, he sat down, he's like, ooh, Rockin' Rye.
I opened it up and it fizzed out. The spillover was Seth's dignity after the hot dog debacle. The death.
Payback's a bitch,
the
buddy.
Death.
So, that's karma.
Oh,
Carmageddon.
Yeah.
So issue 1's out. You know,
issue 1's out now. Yep.
We got to see, you know, kind of where things are progressing. The next issue, which you have on the back cover, Cthulhu happens.
Cthulhu happens in issue 2, and Seth just crushed that cover. crushed. I mean, look at this, listeners. Look at this cover. I'm holding it right next. It's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, actually, that whole issue was, because we've seen it.
You guys got to read the second.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. The inside track guy. Stylistically, artistically, I preferred issue two more than issue one. Not that there's anything wrong with issue one. Issue one is still a great read and a great book, and I'm very proud of it. But I got real comfortable with the character about four pages into issue two, and I believe that it shows.
Well, and
there, it only grows from there as the issues go on.
There are a couple panels in particular in issue one that, you know, boy, they stick with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to issue two. Keep reading. There's more that stick with you. You guys have no, there's going to be some more.
You guys have no idea. We just got some colored pages from issue four today, and...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Seth was driving to the con, and I'm like, dude, look! And, like, an ambulance is coming down the street, and his wife's like, Seth! And, like, I had to pull over. We were looking at the pages.
So, you've been
got in a car wreck looking at pages.
Yeah. You've been teasing us with something big's happening in issue four.
Yeah, that's the last issue. Jesus.
Do you need a wet nap?
I might. I might. It's a rare day I'm speechless. You know, this is a horror book, so not surprisingly, you know, as the series goes on, and you guys read issue two, you know, things start to kind of get a little worse. And issue three...
And a little more epic, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Things blow up in issue two. And then issue three has some really dark stuff, and, you know, I mean, this is Armageddon, and terrible things are happening, and survival horror, and how far would you go? What would you do? You know, who's safe? And then we get to issue four. I can't begrudge Seth because
it's in the script.
It's in the script. And I wrote this scene. I don't know if it's quite the climax of issue four. I don't know. But it.
No, I wouldn't call it a climax. I don't know. I don't know what you mean.
There's a scene in issue four. And this has never happened to this scale before. I actually talked to Josh Ross about this. And I said, volume one of Mystery has some pretty nasty stuff in it. The eyeball scooper thing, the Amish girl with injecting demon blood, the barn scene.
Yeah, that was bad.
The zombie sex club in issue in volume one. Volume one has some dark stuff. And I asked Josh, and I'm like, did I really have you pull anything back and censor anything? And he goes, well, we tweaked the zombie sex club scene a little bit. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, that's true. I was about to tell you something.
There's a scene in issue four of Tales of Mystery that Seth drew it as I wrote it. I said, okay, this is what's happening. I had to literally spin away from the computer because I was about to throw up.
Wow.
And that was the pencils. Not even the ink. And I'm saying this with no exaggeration.
I wish people could see the look that he just gave. It was the most evil, like,
Seth,
fuck yeah.
Well, and to be fair,
just
Seth,
following
had a,
orders.
Seth had a hard time drawing it.
I did.
I mean, how long did it take you to... I mean, it's one panel.
It's one panel. I think I drew the six pages around it. And then came back to it, drew it, erased it, drew it, erased. I probably drew that single panel no less than 8 times. And it still never left the pencil stay. It's still sitting in pencils.
It's still in pencils.
At home. I haven't inked it yet. It's not permanent yet.
No, we're going to actually have to dial it back because it's so foul.
I don't want to get arrested.
Yeah, I told Seth, I'm like, we will get arrested if we publish it this way.
So what is it?
I can't tell you.
I thought we were going to get exclusive rights here.
I'll tell you what you're going to get exclusively.
I mean, it's your podcast.
It is true.
Show everyone.
It would be such a massive spoiler. I couldn't. I legitimately can't give it away. But I will say this. I'm doing this monster tour right now. Almost like 20 shows or something like that in like 18 weeks, something stupid. I'm taking next week off, and I'm going away for a couple days to recover and to go find my happy place because he destroyed me with that panel. I mean, it is so foul. And I will post pictures, and I will send them to you guys, and you can put it up on the website. I mean, literally, like next weekend I'm not doing a show. I got to go somewhere. I got to get my head straight because... I don't know. I'm going to Disney World or something. I don't know what I'm doing. I have to go because
And I got to live with it. I got to change it now. We're going to censor ourselves and tone it down
a
little bit.
Yeah, we're going to do for the best to
too much trouble. But I still have to go home and deal with it. He's done dealing with it. He won't see it till it's done now.
You know, Reed's a rough book. A lot of bad things happen to him and other characters. It's a rare damn speech.
I'm actually a little confused. I'm like, when has Dirk never been able to talk?
Yeah.
It's actually breaking me out of my tour for a couple of days. I gotta go away. I'm getting through this weekend, and I'm just gonna go somewhere for a couple of days and just get my head right, because I wrote the scene.
But when I do, I break Dirk Mary.
Yeah, because I wrote the scene, man, and Seth nailed it, and it's a pivotal, it's a crucial scene. It's something that very much has to happen.
Oh yeah.
You can't take it out. No, you can't take it out. It has to happen.
I can't wait to see the scene, and really, it's just Seth drew both of them in there together, hugging. And that's so scary.
Right, no. Oh, this is no bullshit. I mean, it's legitimately legitimate. We have to. I told Seth as soon as I saw it, I'm like, I said, are you a member of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund? He's like, no. And I said, I'm about to buy you a membership because it's
silly.
Yeah, the vision of From Cthulhu, he drew it in.
No. This is foul.
Oh, no, these are real world problems.
This is real world problem. This is foul.
Like six yesterdogs real?
I mean, we can do that when we're done right here. I don't care.
Yeah, no, that'd be all right.
Yeah. Says the guy that ate four. The fourth one under duress.
Yeah, but his were at least covered. He didn't raw dog any of them.
You know, I offered to give him a raw dog to even up. And he actually turtled a little bit and pooped his pants.
And you didn't even eat any with any vegetables on him. You had him basically
slimmed down. Vegetables are what food eats.
Yeah, but that's filler.
Listen to this guy. Vegetables. If that's your argument, in a hot dog eating contest is vegetables? No, come on.
Page 13, panel 6.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I think it is. Page 13.
Of course it's page 13.
Right, of course. In issue 4, I mean, legitimate, no hype foul. Like, no hype. I literally am going away for a couple days. I mean, I wrote some nasty stuff, and I know that. I'm not like a...
You don't work for Disney.
I'm not a horrible... Right, but I'm not a horrible guy either, you know. But then I write stuff, and... I mean, like, the first chapter of Volume 1 of Mystery is the someone possessing... trying to summon demons by summoning them through the unborn fetuses of pregnant women. And you have a baby demon claw its way out of a pregnant woman's belly. I wrote that. Fine. No problem. The scene in Issue 4...
He's sweating.
I'm literally sweating. I mean,
well, yeah.
I gotta go away for a couple days. I will send you guys pictures. Like, I'm gonna go to an island or Disney World. I'm just getting the fuck out.
Well, here, we'll help you a little bit to clear your mind for a moment,
please.
So, of the nightlife that you've experienced since you've been here,
yes.
We went and we had beers and you had Shirley Temples and played pinball. Which, by the way, ironic that my first ball playing pinball against you, my score was $666,000.
Yeah, you got that. Mean I didn't want to really tell you this on the air, but I guess it will. I own your soul now. So
no, we pretty much figured that out.
Yeah, okay.
It's Dirk on Comics.
Right, but now it's official. Like, yeah. The master has spoken.
Yeah.
Like, see, it's like, that's one of those things like in a horror movie that people watch the movie, and, like, you get the 666 on pinball, and you're like, oh, whoa, that's cool. And, like, people outside are like, no!
Yeah.
I'm like, so, Derek, do you want to play another game?
Now, in fairness, I'll give you credit. We played 3 games.
Yep.
I won 2, but the game you won, you bent me over like a pinball wizard.
I did. Well, you know, because at that point, you know, I wanted to lure you in a little bit more. And then I let you pick the third game, because I picked the first two, Twilight Zone and Elvira.
Yep.
And Twilight Zone is where you had the 666, I think. Was it Elvira?
I don't know. I've got a picture.
I think it was Elvira.
Yeah.
My girl, Elvira. But, yeah, so then, once I owned you, because I lured you in the first game, played the second one, took your soul, Then the third game, you got to pick Dark Knight, Batman, and I beat you by was it over 11 million points?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I have a picture. So hey, yeah. I'll send you that, too.
But you also graced us with your siren voice.
Oh, yes, yes. So we went to the Pyramid Scheme. We went to Pyramid Scheme to play pinball. And then yesterday we went to the PlayStation to karaoke.
Yeah, and you did a little Pearl Jam, and you learned a lesson.
I wanted to loosen it up.
And you learned a lesson, though. Always open with Black Sabbath.
Always, yeah. I should open with... I was afraid it wouldn't be a metal room. And then that dude played a Drowning Pool, let the bodies hit the floor, and the place exploded. I'm like, dude, this crowd's hip, man.
Game on.
Game on.
Yeah.
I had that Black Sabbath card in his hand so fast. Yeah, they did War Pigs. I feel bad that I had to perform as KDMFM, which the guy actually announced his kill, Dirk Motherfucking
Manning. Well, yeah, he came over and goes, what's that stand for? So I wrote it out for him. Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, you always lead with Black Sabbath when you karaoke. Dan Dougherty, Tony Maiello, and I have our karaoke supergroup, Satellite Clit.
It's Dan's birthday.
It is Dan's birthday today. Oh, well, see, I guess I could say I was serenading my bandmate for his birthday.
There you go.
But, yeah, karaoke Black Sabbath. Always lead with Black Sabbath. I will not make that mistake next time. I will lead with Sabbath.
It was actually a little sad because there were so many singers that you guys didn't get to experience our karaoke boy band.
Oh, no, we didn't. But I'll tell you what, for the record, this guy, Derek, not this guy, that guy, that man can sing.
Hey.
You burned it down at the end of the night.
I told you, you never heard
like
Motown.
A Jerry Springer stage set. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a Jerry Springer show by the end of the night. Everybody was having a good time.
I've always said you've never heard Motown, so you heard a fat white boy like me sing it. So.
It was amazing. I mean, I couldn't get my hands off of him.
Well, and it was funny because you had your arm around me earlier in the night,
yeah.
And I was talking to somebody else, and I didn't even look. And I turned around and he goes, you didn't even flinch. I go, I knew it was you. And he goes, well, yeah, I guess. And I said, well, it's because nobody touches me like Dirk Manning touches me.
True story.
Yeah. Is that what you drew on page 13, panel 6? Is you touching me?
You're closer than you probably realize.
I've already got ideas.
I don't know if you do, but you might. But it. Oh.
Dirk touches the hearts and minds of many.
And the
directly, yeah.
And the undercarriages sometimes too.
You can't prove anything. That restraining order never went all the way through.
That's right.
Restraining orders are just another way to say I love you.
That's right. Isn't that how it works?
Well, yeah, Stephen King said it best. I have the heart of a small child. It's in a jar on my desk.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, everybody go check out Dirk. You guys already know how to find him by now.
DirkManning.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. I don't know what I'm doing with it, but it's there.
Go check out Seth the Moose.
At Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr. I know what to do with them.
I don't know how to use Instagram, so.
Instagram, I'm fine. Nope. My rule is no dinner, no selfies on Instagram. But Tumblr confuses me.
Yeah. And if people are lucky, they might get to see some video of you doing karaoke.
Yes. Well, hopefully the Black Sabbath. The Jeremy one was a little rough.
I didn't record the Black
Sabbath. I've got access.
Oh, good.
I got access. We'll make it work.
Yeah. Cosmic Casey has the Black
Sabbath. Yeah, Cosmic Casey has Black Sabbath. And...
And now the crossover is complete.
The crossover is complete. So I will send you pictures. But, yeah, seriously, next week I'm going to go home, take care of my affairs for a day or two, and then I'm just going to go away for about a week. I'm just going offline. I need to refine my center after that page because, damn.
Yeah.
Tales of Mystery Carmageddon. Good stuff. Read, 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 read.
Go buy it.
$1.99, first issue, full color.
Monthly.
Monthly from here on out for the next 4 months. Oh, Eric Powell cover for $1.99. And then I wrote it and sent through it. So there you go.
It's way underpriced for the art, a little overpriced for the writing, but
and yeah. That's fair. And that's so yeah, agreed.
Seth agrees. So. Yeah. All right. There thanks you. Guys. We appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Well, we now have the great pleasure of being here with Tyler and Sarah Souls, fantastic Grand Rapids creators, good friends of ours, and you guys have a new book out.
We do have a new book. It's called Hank Steiner Monster Detective.
So give the elevator pitch that you've had to give all weekend.
I haven't really had to give it all weekend. It is basically The Munsters meets Dick Tracy. It is, the main character is a Frankensteinish character who is a detective and solves crimes for the monster populace.
Nice.
So in the world, you've got humans and you've got monsters, and monsters are treated as second-class citizens. The humans, like, basically, the monsters live in the ghetto, the humans will dump garbage in their streets, and nobody, like, monsters will disappear. And nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit about the monsters. They just disappear, except for Hank Steiner. He's like the man on the inside. So.
Nice. Now, husband-wife team, how are you splitting up the duties on this? How's it breaking out?
So Tyler does the pencils and the inks. We actually have a writer that we work with that lives in St. Louis. And so Tyler will come up with the general concept for a book, and he'll send the idea to Scott, who's our writer, and he'll send us back a script. Tyler takes it and does the pencils and inks, and then they hand the book over to me, and I do the colors,
everything,
the lettering,
else,
and the book layout, and take it to the printer, and deal with the nightmare of getting it printed.
Yeah, she has the crappy job. Like, she's got to make sure everything looks good in the end. Which is, I just draw the pictures, and I'm like, good enough, here you go, honey.
Now, this is published by your studio, Killustration Studios.
Yeah.
And so, where can people find this?
Well, okay, so right now we just have physical copies that we just picked up like 2 days ago. We are going to submit to Comixology. It'll probably be on there. I mean, like, our first book, Durantis, got on there with no problem, so I imagine that there will be a Comixology release. We'll probably be doing some sort of web download, too. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to build a website or not, but right now it's just solely physical.
Through us
it's or our review. Etsy store.
Yeah, it's in review for a couple comic book shops, and then it'll be available through us and on our Etsy store.
Okay, so people went to KillustrationStudios.com?
Yes.
Yes.
Then they can obviously order a copy there.
Yep,
so.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, now is this going to be a miniseries? Are we talking ongoing? What are we looking at?
Right now, my goal is 4 issues so I can do a trade-size book in the end.
Okay.
We've got a huge story arc planned. We've got a bunch of things that we want to introduce that we haven't got to. Lots of violence, lots of silly monster people and stuff. It's not going to be a one and done sort of thing.
Yeah.
And timeline-wise, I would suspect one a year. it's kind of a long... I can't imagine getting one out faster than one a year.
Yeah, it's one of those things like paying gigs come first. So
yeah.
Do those first and then work on your labor of love sort of thing. So.
Do you have any other projects while you elbow your wife?
Yeah.
Got any other projects that you're working on besides this?
I'm working on part of an anthology for Travis McIntyre.
Yep, with Michigan Comics.
Called Step Right Up. I don't remember who the anthology is going to get published with, so I'm not going to randomly pick one.
I think they're publishing it themselves, if I'm correct.
Okay, it might be. It might be just them. I know they just did one.
Yeah.
So I'm doing that for him. I'm working on a graphic novel for Barry Duffield, who's an actor from Spartacus. That is called Tandori Apocalypse.
It's called what?
Tandori Apocalypse.
Okay.
And it's kind of like Clerks meets vampires. It's like a weird apocalyptic kind of humorous story about this like family that owns like a small shop that is surviving a vampire apocalypse. And then I'm doing another book for a fella out in New Jersey called Fallstreak.
Okay.
And that is a really like weird like sci-fi horror sort of theme trippy story. It's
weather phenomenon.
Yeah, like there's a weather phenomenon involved and like some weird psychological stuff that goes on. It's very different for me. I think I'm really excited about that one because I get to kind of try to like, I don't know, do something that's kind of out of my normal comfort zone, so I'm excited to see what I can do with that, I guess.
Now, are you doing just pencils, or are you doing pencils, inks, colors?
For Fallstreak, I'm doing pencils, inks, and I'm going to do grayscale, and then Tandori Apocalypse, we're doing the full thing.
Yeah.
So pencils, inks, colors, Sarah's on colors.
Colors nice. And letters for me, so that one's Tyler did a book with him before, and this book, when it came up, we were like, let's just take that whole project.
You know you want to give it to us.
Because
we're so good.
Well, you know, and I mean, just from my own, like, business standpoint, the things I do in my everyday life,
sometimes it's a lot easier just to have one person just, hey,
that was,
it's,
yeah,
it's going to be smoother if
that's
you just let us handle
what
all
you
of
wanted.
It.
That's exactly yeah. what you wanted.
Well, and you also have the bonus, too, of you two working together. You've obviously got the good relationship of how to work with each other.
Yeah.
It's going to be smoother.
Yeah. Well, and he can
end
see
result is going
to
be better.
He's been able to go online and, like, see our art and be like, oh, this is what the final product looks like. That's what I want. So
right.
There's no guesswork in finding another person. There's no middleman.
And we love working together. And a lot of people ask us, they're like, how is that? To, like, we're both stay-at-home artists. We sit back-to-back and, like, work together. And we get a lot of people that are like, that seems horrible or crazy. Or we're like,
it has its stressful moments, but for the most part, it's a lot of fun.
And the stressful moments come more from who's going to vacuum.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah,
who's
going to vacuum because we
got to
finish this
vacuum.
Sort of thing. So.
Now, the one thing that I know the creator-owned is always the preferred, but the fun thing, too, is, I mean, if I know if we take Godzilla out of it, if you, you know, if somebody said, hey, go work on a, you know, an already previously
right.
created property, got any like, wish list ones that you'd love to do?
Oh, my God.
Our list probably varies so much.
I would take whatever comes my way, to be honest with you. If I got to work on something that I, like, oh, man, I would love to just do a pinup for, like, The Goon or something.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like, I love Eric Powell's stuff. I'd love to meet him sometime, but I would love to draw something for The Goon. I love Hellboy. I'm normally not a big Deadpool fan, but I'm kind of into the stuff that Brant Wasain and Jerry Duggan are doing right
yeah.
now. So I would totally do something for them just based on who they are, I think. So.
Yeah. Sarah, what's on your list?
I read Vertigo books. Like, I am, like, a Constantine, Sandman, Fables. Like, I read those types of books, so anything that's in that kind of genre. But I don't... Comics is almost secondary to me. I do a lot of graphic design for my regular contracts,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm almost pulled into whatever jobs he ends up with. So I don't go after jobs on my own, but those are the books that I read, so I just think it would be fun to work on something like that at some point. Not that Hank isn't almost there, because it's that pulp connection. And
yeah.
Yeah, I really love working on this book, and there's definitely things, even with the vampire book, that I can really get into that, too. So.
Nice. Cool. So, obviously, KillstrationStudios.com. Where else can people find you online?
I have a DeviantArt. I think it's just KillStration.DeviantArt.com.
Okay.
That's not... Facebook
is a good one.
Twitter.
I'm at Killustration on Twitter. I have an Etsy store. If you Google Killustration Studios, it pops up. I don't remember what the actual address is. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to reading Hank.
Awesome.
So we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thanks.